Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bond Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso.
Hello.
And Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
How is everybody on this hot evening?
Not too hot.
We're all right.
I'm actually cooling down a
little bit. We got the fan going.
We do have the fan going.
We're being hydrated.
All right. We're fine. We're going to be fine. Everything's fine here.
It's fine. Yeah.
Luke, we're going to have company. All right.
I'm okay with it.
Welcome to episode 81. We're coming to you on August 29th, 2016, in case you're keeping score at home. Today, friends, we are going to be talking about comic book reviews. Now, my reviews are you guys. I don't generally read reviews online, but as seasoned comic readers, I'm wondering, do you guys read them? Do you regularly read reviews?
Well, yeah, there used to be a critics column I read very regularly called Trusty Henchman.
Wait a minute, that sounds awful familiar.
Yeah, I used to read that all the time because I trusted the critic for the most part. He had a couple of axes he had to grind, and he had some major freaking chips on his shoulder, like over Mark Millar and people like that, which I don't, you know, really, I mean, I kind of understood why Chris felt that way about those things, but yeah. But no, I read Chris's column all the time because I thought he did a great job.
Do you no longer do that?
No.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, it was a different service that paid me for that, and they stopped paying me, and I can do it for the store too, but I'm not reading as much, and it takes a bite out of my time as well.
Besides that, you have us.
So
this venue,
I can spread it through here.
That's right.
The convergence of Secret Wars and stuff, and things break you?
That broke me quite a bit.
Yeah,
that broke me quite a bit, because when I compiled that all together, it was huge. It was a novel that I basically wrote. And
published that.
It was a novel of pain. And it's just one of those things when you're trapped in the machine of the mainstream comics like that, and you see what they're doing to you as it's happening, you just kind of like...
It was a very Kafka-esque experience for Chris. Yeah. It was like his version of the penal colony.
Yeah, it's just like with all the other events that happened, because I did like a final recap of everything, where I took all my past predictions, compared them to what happened and what I thought it meant for the industry. Like that was like a 3,000 word essay right there. And by the end of it, I was just like, well, as long as they don't do this, this, and this. And as I said that, I was able to put links to them doing exactly those things. And it was just like, no, this is an abusive relationship. I need to get out of this.
And etched upon his skin, red crossover suck, crossover suck, crossover suck.
Cole, let's go back to you. Right. You said you did. So you did have the trusty henchman. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other review sites that you go to get your comics reviews?
I just sort of spot check anymore. IO9 does a really great job of when they have lots of different things that they discuss on the site pertaining to geekery, be it sci-fi films or TV, video games, and comics. But every once in a while, someone will write a really impassioned review about a comic book, and that'll pop up. Like, case in point was the werewolf comic that just came out.
Cry Havoc!
Mything in Action, Volume 1. And I read the review today, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to need to check that out. Because werewolves. Yeah, because werewolves. Women and werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sold. I haven't even read the book yet. I will review it. This is episode 81.
81.
We'll be recording 82 shortly. Yes, I will review it for 83. Promise.
All right, we got that. We got that.
Wait, my
heart's record.
Here. This is my left pap. I cross my left pap.
What about you guys? Do you have any review sites that you go to?
Not really. I keep an eye on the Comics Reporter, and that does link up to a bunch of other review sites, but also comic news and people talking about the relevance of certain things being published from all. Mainstream, indie, foreign, everything. But basically, no, it's just one of those like, oh, I could just go read that right now.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I listen to customers, so that's my reviews as well. You know, that kind of gives me a breakdown of like, sometimes people come out of left field or other people that I know will recommend some things that I may have missed.
Well, I live in left field, so there you go.
Yeah, so, yeah, but otherwise, as far as just like regular reviewers, I can't think of anybody to recommend. right now. Sorry.
Do you?
Yeah, mostly it's just by being in the store. It's the same thing that she said of like, you know, or like my coworkers being like, you would probably dig this, you know, and then checking it out from there. Because I'd have to read a bunch of things and get like people's feelings about like on certain things and get a gauge and then gain. I don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. I'd just read the comic at that point.
Right.
And a lot of times I see reviews on the internet where people are trigger happy.
Yeah.
So I just don't even want to bother with that too. So.
Well, every once in a while, something that I'll get real quick and OCD about, like stuff from Black Mask, like we can never go home again.
Yeah.
You know, and I read about, you guys have been reading that for months, mm-hmm. and I think I only listened to you with half an ear, and I read a review, actually read a review and probably an IO9 online, and I went, I think I'm really, really freaking missing out on something. So I hopped on eBay, found a first print of the first issue, and then, you know, came in and talked to you guys, and you're like, yeah, Cole, we reviewed that on the podcast like months ago.
I was like,
Do you not listen to the show?
Shut up, Ben.
I think a good thing is to look through solicitations in the catalog and just see kind of what you dig. I think that's my best thing. It's not really a review.
I am into word of mouth. If a friend of mine whose opinion I trust speaks up and is very excited about a new book, you know. Mm-hmm. Look how often you guys will review something right here at this table,
and
I'll go, can I put this in my box? Oh, thank you.
I did just remember, I haven't been reading for a while now, but Comics Alliance has a staff writer named Chris Sims, and the thing is, there's a lot of problems with him as well. He's kind of got a past of some bad stuff, but when he's right on about certain things, he's very well spoken about them. And he does regular reviews, but he does reviews of older comics, and he loves like Jimmy Olsen comics. But he hated Transformers. People forced him to read the stuff that I love. And so he did a series called The Transformed Man, where he basically was keeping track of, like, from the viewpoint of somebody who's like, I don't know the red robot from the blue robot. But suddenly he's just like, I love this robot. And so I love
the blue robot.
Yeah. So I will recommend a lot of the stuff he writes. It's just kind of, it's worth kind of doing research on his past, because there was some really bad stuff that got brought up a while ago, and everybody's kind of forgotten about that recently. Like, he used to harass a few female reviewers online, and he apologized for it. So I think the storm's blown over, but there's still elements of just like, you don't make the best decisions all the time, do you? But he can be very, 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 very impassioned and well-spoken about what he reviews.
If I were someone who didn't come to a comic book store often or worked here, do you have any recommendations for where I would go online? Do you have standard Joe Civilian review sites that you, I mean, maybe you can't vouch for how good they are, but at least you know what the URL is?
As a portal, I'll still say Comics Reporter.
Yeah.
It gets you to a bunch. And some that you never expect, like Todd Klein, I think, is a guy who's a letterer who's done tons of the titles that you see every day. Mm-hmm. And he'll just do a random, like, I read this book, and do a quick review. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a neat, quick little, like, I'm a, you know, 67-year-old guy who just read this new issue of Suicide Squad. You know? But, yeah, I can't think of any others. Comics Alliance does have good reviews.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it also kind of begs the question, what are good comic book sites? Because I visit like five or six of them. We share them on, I frequently share links from many of them on the Panel Jumper page. Yeah. You share them, which I, you know, regularly poach from the Comics Dungeon newsletter. Mm. But are there sites that are good for folks new to comics to visit that you would recommend? You said mm-hmm. Comics Alliance. Was there another one that...
Let's see, Comics Alliance, Comics Reporter. There's the Comics Brewery. Mm-hmm. They have interesting articles, and they look for odd kind of missing in history comics to talk mm-hmm. about at times. There was a site called Sketched, and it's mm. spelled weird. It's like missing the E or something.
It's apostrophe D.
Yeah, but yeah. He stopped producing. Yeah, he stopped producing stuff. I think he's working for somebody else. Multiversity is a good site. They do extensive annotations on all things Mike Mignola. So you want to check that out. They actually have created their own reading timeline about like the proper reading timeline that I think Mignola's like, yes, do that.
The people that live in this world that have time to do those things, that have time in their lives to do those kinds of things, just amaze
These
me.
These people are paid to read comic books.
Well,
the people that amaze me are the ones that rip apart things. Like there's people doing that with No Man's Sky right now where they're documenting everything that one person said.
It's like if you could take that creative energy and put it toward, global warming or, alternate energy or it's just that just, I mean, I am a geek. I'm a hardcore geek. It's one of my favorite things about me being me, but still something with that energy. It's going to benefit mankind.
I want to complain about how Spider-Man's suit looked different, but
is that the right blue? It's supposed to be darker.
Another one. I forget the name of
I can't reach you from here.
I can't think of the name of the writer, but the Tea Room of Despair is a pretty good, it's like a blog spot page. And
yeah,
the guy
I've been there.
Yeah, guy. Yeah, yeah.
I was
Whenever
desperate.
Ben is suffering his long, dark tea time of the soul.
No, but I do know what site you're talking about.
Yeah, and...
That's enough out of you.
I can't remember the name of the website, but I know the guy goes by the name of Bully, and he's a comic store owner who does some fun
That's
reviews.
That's not Bleeding Cool, is it?
No, okay. Yeah, I would actually...
And there's the Outhouse. What's the...
I like the Outhousers.
Yeah, Outhousers.
Because
but
it's...
They're
not real news.
Yeah, they're like the Onion.
Yeah, but we're they do getting, reviews as well. It's like the Onion for comics, you know.
I guess we're getting away from, like, neophytes finding new information sources.
Right.
For a while, going back to the Outhousers, when I first started visiting that site to pull topics for here, one guy would always, like, every article he wrote would be like, by so-and-so and Frank Miller.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
It might be like Jude Terror is one of the guys.
Something like that. I was going to say Jude Law, but I know that wasn't right.
What I love is one of the guys, his name is Thanos Copter, because there's a really obscure like a power company or electric company Marvel comic where Thanos shows up and, here's a cosmic deity of, aliens who controls limitless powers, and he shows up in a helicopter that has his name on it. So a reviewer just decided, like, that's my name.
Yep.
It's like, okay, I'll read you.
Yeah, and they're the ones who have the did DC do something stupid today counter.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I like to go there.
Yeah. Counter.
Cool. All right. Anything else on comic websites for reviews or recommendations
There's a lot of people doing stuff on YouTube. Danny Danger used to do stuff with the Weirdlings. She would do a pull list every week, which is really great.
Yeah.
I don't think she does it anymore, but if you wanted to dig through some of that stuff just to find out what's happened maybe in the last couple years, she's just really great. She just does a quick little something on it, things she's looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. I'll recommend Jill Pentazzi. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She also goes by the name The Nerdy Bird.
Okay.
And she has like a blog or had a blog called Has Boobs Reads Comics.
Oh, yeah.
She's really fun. She's got an interesting perspective. I believe she has MS. She's wheelchair bound. So like when they magically healed Oracle, that was a problem.
Oh, I've met her. I met her at Emerald City years ago.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She's really fun. I think that's all I could recommend right now.
Cool. All right. Well, if you're listening and you're into all this stuff, we'll put links to these in the show notes. I'll actually make the effort to do that. And let's move on and let's talk about city-specific comics. And I know you guys have talked about every once in a while a comic that takes place here in Seattle, our lovely hometown. And I want to know what other comics are there that take place both, in my lovely hometown here or elsewhere that somebody who lives in
Chris
elsewhere...
Chris and I are whipping out our notes here. Hold on.
You could just go with generally that Marvel does, like, real world. Like, it's always, like,
right.
New York
it's
City.
It's always New York.
Yeah. So, Spider-Man is from Queens.
Right.
And Captain America's from Brooklyn.
Daredevil's in
Hell's Kitchen. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, that's just the... the blaringly obvious.
New York aside, though, yeah.
But you want Seattle, so you want to hit.
Well, I just hit a blank wall.
That's all right. Keep going.
Mike Allred and Chris Robertson started out a comic from Vertigo a couple years ago called iZombie. And I've always been a bit of a fan of Allred, so I try to support him whenever I can. But what fascinated me about the book was it was set in Eugene, Oregon, where he lived.
I've been there.
Where yes, you have, where I spent a great, where I frittered away a great deal of my youth going back and forth to college. And so the book was kind of fascinating because I'm sure you guys are familiar with, the TV series. The comic book is quite a bit different from the TV series, but in essence, they're essentially the same. Gwen in the comic book is a zombie by happenstance, but in the comic book, she works in a graveyard in Eugene where she has access to bodies. But then when they adapted it for the CW, one of the things that I thought was actually kind of cute was they changed Gwen's name to Liv. Is a living zombie, Olivia, Liv, and they reset it in Seattle. But the thing about the TV show is that I watched the entire first season. It's CW. It's everybody's pretty, and they're young, and they're pretty. No, they really are pretty.
Did they actually film it here, or did they film it?
I was just
going
to say is that I forgot it was supposed to be set in Seattle because every once in a while you've got a matte shot of the Space Needle in the background, right. From a street level shot that is unrecognizable to anybody who actually lives here.
I mean,
here.
That's the thing is like, yeah. What do you when it's Seattle, like with Green Arrow is in right. Seattle, it's like right. Every other panel might have the Space Needle, even if it doesn't make any,
Yeah.
So the other book I was going to mention of Seattle was Mike Grell's run on Green Arrow.
And
the current run is in Seattle.
Is it still?
Yeah, they came back to Seattle.
Oh,
yeah.
Because he wrote that from like 87 on. That was post-crisis, right?
Yeah.
It was like 80 issues set in Seattle.
Yeah.
He and Black Canary resettled here. But it was very... But Grell tried to do a very street-level pedestrian kind of story. Not unlike the way the Daredevil stories were being told at the time as well, where there weren't a lot of superheroes, high tech, anything like that. It was all very much at the street level. I'm sorry, Chris, what were you going to say?
No, you covered it. Yeah. I was also going to mention Hate or Buddy Does Seattle. Mm-hmm. Those are in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I never have read through too much of them, so I can't say like how much as a focus. The Green River Killer, as far as Washington goes, it's a
comic?
It's a really good graphic novel.
Really?
It's really dark. Stephen King has like an opening that says like, man, this is harsh, man.
Well, it's accurate. That's why it's dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the boogeymen when I was growing up, was the Green River Killer.
Yeah, I mean, they start with even when his first supposed, victim, like this kid, when he was young. So it starts right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dark Horse published that. It's really good. It's worth checking out. Greg Rucka did a run of Wolverine that took place in parts of Oregon, and like Sabretooth's story was in Seattle. Mm. So there's a little bit there. There's a lot of things that guest star in Seattle, but I don't think they like to ever spend too much time here.
I did leave out the one element of the Green Arrow Seattle period that was one of my favorites, which is Black Canary and Green Arrow run a flower shop. Do you remember the name of the flower shop?
No.
Sherwood Florist.
Boom! Interesting side note, Mike Grell used to live in the building like right across the street from us. That's the bedroom place.
Bedrooms and more.
Well, I thought he was living here at the time because he signed at a show in Eugene, and that's when I first had him sign my Warlord comics about that same time period, early 80s. Yeah. Not the same time period?
No, I think that's it. Actually, I'm not sure if it was Mike Grell or if it's Jim Woodring that used to live across the street.
I thought it was Mike Grell.
Those are two radically different creators,
but
dude.
They're both comic creators.
Woodring's anyway. Still in Seattle, isn't he?
Yeah, he's still in Seattle.
I walk past that store, Bedrooms and More. I'm sure you do all the time.
I got my bed from them.
But every once in a while, they will have a little sandwich sign. This is apropos of nothing. A sandwich board out front saying, like, take our mattress buying class this Saturday.
Do it.
What? Is that a legit thing?
No, here's the thing. I went should we sidetrack to this?
Yeah, why not? Okay, got time.
I am really intrigued. Yeah.
So I had been sleeping on like a really crappy single bed for months that finally like the metal bar was deciding to murder me. And so after like a week of sheer and utter pain, I was like, I gotta go get bed. And so I went there and I was just like, give me bed. And the the fantastic woman there, her name was Christopher. She was
Her name was Christopher.
Okay. And I asked her, I was like, do you want Christopher
this
Short?
This was a memorable experience.
I'm just checking
it was.
Because your name was Christopher.
Give me bed. Yeah. Give me bed.
Give me bed. No, and so she was just like, well, how much time do you have? I'm like, just give me best bed with this money. And she was like,
Grundy,
can you
need
come
bed?
And she was like, can you come back and make an appointment with me for about like an hour's worth of time? And I was like, but I want now. Okay. So I came back the next day and she spent her time and I got to sample a lot of different beds and she kind of taught me a lot of different things about choosing the good bed. So yes, take that class. It's worth it.
And Chris Casso, an amazing bed.
Bed school graduate.
Did. Yes.
Wow.
I always want to laugh at that every time I walk past it.
So did I, until I learned a valuable lesson.
Gundy got bed.
I shouldn't judge things before.
But as far as
the best.
You made that story way, way exciting.
There you go.
You told me the real story, and it was not that exciting.
Well, no.
It was still very exciting.
Nicole, you're
bed.
Sitting at a table of storytellers. Storytellers.
Back on topic, though.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. So, Sherwood Flores.
Justice League Detroit took place in Detroit.
Where? What?
They,
I forgot all about
apparently
that.
Detroit needed its own Justice League, but they ended up with Aquaman and Vibe and Gypsy, so not the best.
Wasn't that the group that was headed by Martian Manhunter?
And Zatanna. Yeah. Yeah.
And, they were all the really, really tacky early 80s characters.
Yeah. So did Aquaman just hang out in the Detroit River all day?
Pretty much, yeah.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
No, not at all.
Dr. Fate is in Brooklyn right now. Mm. Runaways was in California. I can't remember where.
Well, they were Runaways.
Oh,
they're all over the place.
Fate is in Southern California.
Fate is in Southern California.
Like
Aquaman was in Sub Diego for a while because somebody made a giant earthquake machine that sunk half of San Diego.
Well, you reviewed that collection a couple of years back.
It's
I remember
stuff.
That because that's one of your favorite Aquaman arcs. Yeah.
New Superman, the new title called New Superman, takes place in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as name cities go. And this one's kind of a stretch, but like Providence, the Alan Moore book, takes place in Providence, also known as Lovecraft Country, which is what they kind of, all the places, all the different Lovecraft books, they just kind of say it's Lovecraft Country now. Hmm. So that's all New England. You know, it's all some of the minor locations are made up names, but they're based on specific places. I forget exactly where Arkham is supposed to be, but
because Arkham's not real,
it's not. But it's based
not
on
a real place.
Not
in, Arkham's not in Gotham.
No. Yes.
The Arkham came from. Arkham was a city from the Lovecraft books,
Or a town, small college town.
Yeah, and then Denny O'Neill adopted it. When he started reworking post Silver Age Batman stuff and created Arkham Asylum,
it's a good place to put insane
inspiration
people.
Inspiration from Lovecraft.
That's where I was going with that.
Some of Letter 44 is in the White House.
That's right.
Good job.
I thought Wonder Woman had a lot of stories in Washington D.C., but now we're not too sure. I can't remember. So yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, there you go. If you live in any one of those cities, read some of those comics. Maybe you will see your house in the background artwork.
Nice.
Probably somebody
not.
Used Google Maps. Creepy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to Book Report, friends. And this week, let's start with Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Oh, wait, I didn't have my notes out.
This week, let's start with Mr. Chris
Casso. No, I get my
All
notes
right,
are
Cole.
Out.
All right. Lay it on
okay,
us, Cole.
Chris, I'm terribly sorry, but the next two reviews I do for the next two shows are going to be Mark Millar. Are you going to be okay with this?
I'll soldier through.
Okay. All right. Because, I mean, I tried to put my critical hat on, but sometimes I just was too busy having a good time.
I've been giving him good reviews.
Yeah,
lately.
You have. And I know, but I know it's been a challenge for you.
It's,
so
it
moving
almost
on,
breaks me.
my review this week is for Mark Millar and Duncan Fegredo's MPH. This is the trade of the first five issue limited series that came out in 2015, published by Image. Well, I got to tell you, this is an unoriginal premise that is one of the more charming of Mark Millar's stories. It's basically about this drug dealer named Roscoe, who is a big fan of self-help guru Tony Robbins. And so Roscoe has got this whole game plan of what he's going to do with his money. He's got his vision boards, you know. He's got his blue Maserati, and the clothes he's going to wear, the girlfriend he's going to marry. He's got, and if he just sticks to his positive attitude, these things are going to happen. happen. Within the first five pages of the first issue, his boss rats him out and he winds up in prison. And he's okay with that because he's got a positive attitude. He's got his vision board. He's got, you know, he's got his plans for his Maserati, his girlfriend, his family, what have you. You know, he's going to make do. He's going to come out of it an improved man because he's never stopped working on his own self-improvement until he learns that his girlfriend is actually being hit on by his former boss, and then he gets royally ticked off, and he takes the prison drug dealer up on the offer for this drug called MPH, which what gives him super speed. And like most speedsters in comics anymore, not only do they move very, very quickly, they can also command space and time. So he's moving so fast. Roscoe is moving so fast that, you know, everyone else is a statue around him. Not a particularly original premise. The characters are charming, but you know, Duncan Fegretto is one of the most gifted illustrators alive today, and I always forget that until I pick up a book that he's drawn and I'm like, oh man, this fella just knows how to draw drama and people and action.
Good architecture
and,
in there too.
He's just the most beautiful artist, and this is some of his best superhero work because he does great drama, he does other great graphic tales. The ending of the story is terribly cliched and predictable, but you know what? I was so caught up in the charm of the book that I didn't see it coming. I do recommend it. I don't recommend, you know, buying it. If you can borrow it or get it from the local public library, I think that's the best way to go.
You guys didn't hear that.
Yeah. Because I just don't... It's not something that I would reread. I mean, Fegretto's work is terrific, but it's not a book I would reread. But I can't not recommend it.
All right.
So, cool. MPH.
MPH.
Yes, sir.
Frank meets the Flash.
I always like the vision board part of that.
Yeah.
He just has like this board of like, he takes scraps and he puts them up there and he's like, that's what I want in life.
That's a thing that people who do those self-help seminars, you know, do.
I always wanted to have a villain that was called Evil Tony Robbins, who was just Tony Robbins, who tapped into a new demographic.
No, dude, I have known you for a long, long time, and you can come up with a more clever name, I know this, than Evil Tony Robbins.
I don't know. The joke itself was clever. I don't know.
Tony Robbins.
No, okay. Off mic, we're going to work on this, because I think that's a great idea, but I want to encourage you to get your vision clear.
Sure.
All right, enough of that. Vision boards
enough
after
of
this.
That.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Vision boards for all. Chris Casso, what did you read this week, sir?
I read All-Star Batman by Snyder, Romita Jr., Shalvey, and a bunch of other humans. It got a lot of hype online. There was a lot of people that did some like super positive reviews. And going back to what we're talking about, reviews, it's one of the reasons I don't like reading reviews, because there's just... I don't get half of what people write online anymore. It's okay. It's Romita Jr. just doesn't work for me on most DC comics, and that's just a unique bias that happens when you've read too many books. Like I grew up with him doing Thor, Spider-Man,
Daredevil,
and the thing is, he looks like his father, Romita Sr., who always drew Spider-Man, and it's a certain style that doesn't fit in my head for Batman.
I think as far as his current stuff, though, this looks better.
It's like better.
It looks tighter.
It's better, and he's not drawing children, so that's a plus
that
because
always
he always gives them watermelon heads. It's
with
fine.
Really like strange now, tiny bodies. I don't know.
Is this part of the new Rebirth World Order where it's a weekly comic now?
No, this will be monthly.
This one is monthly.
This will be monthly. Just
so
because...
he will be drawing the whole book as opposed to the.
Yeah, so the style of the book is that the main story is Romita Jr., but there's always a backup by a different artist. I think it's still not clear to me how that's getting split up.
Well, I thought they were doing that because they were going to be bi-weekly or twice a month or something.
That's the other books. Romita Jr. can do a schedule. Yeah. Romita Jr. can hit a schedule, but this is monthly because he could hit a monthly schedule.
And you can hit that microphone.
I can, yeah. But it's just, it was boring to me. The basic idea is that Batman was, they finally caught Two-Face again. And Two-Face is sending out like a message to the world saying, if you prevent Batman from taking me into this thing that might cure me, I will not release blackmail evidence because he apparently, the new version of Two-Face, his whole deal is he knows everybody's darker side and can blackmail everybody.
So he's the Assange of the, he's the WikiLeaks guy.
He's
of the
WikiLeaks of villains and mafia and everybody in the world. And so he just puts like a $1 million bounty on Batman or something. So like the all these random D-level villains start, you know, attacking the Bat Jet, and then people in the diners start attacking Batman. Because apparently Two-Face has random dirt on this trucker. It's not a great concept. Maybe I'll give the next issue or two a try. I'm just not as sold on Snyder as everyone in the world is, as far as on Batman stuff. It's not that I think he's bad. It's just I don't actually care anymore. But that's just me being DC Rebirth, DC whatever, don't care. It's just that for all the hype, for $5, it was a lot of meh for me.
You know? All right. Cool. Thanks, Chris. That's All-Star Batman. And Nicole, what about you?
All right, I'm going to bring this party up because we'll talk about Black Panther.
Can we sing now?
What's the song?
Why, Wakanda? No.
Okay, so I'm just going to put this out here because I looked it up in the meantime. The trade for Black Panther is going to include issues 1-4 plus something from 1961. I don't know why. Which I'm a little disappointed by because issue 5 gave me the feels so hard, but it's coming out in a couple days on August 31st. Right now, that's when it's scheduled. So I highly, highly recommend, you know, going to your local comic book store, getting on special order for it now, or emailing me at nicole@comicsdungeon.com and I will mail you one.
This is the Ta-Nehisi comics.
And Brian Freeze. I always say that wrong.
So is Chris Sprouse drawing it now?
Yes. Stelfreeze will be doing the third arc.
Okay.
Right in the meantime, we have...
I love Chris Sprouse.
I have to say that I like Sprouse a little bit more than Stelfreeze, only because the contrasting on the face that Brian does is really, really harsh.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work for the characters. I think it's fine in general. It doesn't take away from me too much. But when I saw issue 5, it was like, great. Okay, so anyway, I got that out of the way.
Tell us what you read.
So issue 4, you know, when I said issue 3 was a really good middle ground, now issue 4 is dealing with the people who is the Zenzi, who you saw in the beginning, and Tetu, who shows up in issue 3. And they're these kind of mystical people, and they're on their own path. The Midnight Angels are continuing. They're trying to figure out what is their next strategy because now Black Panther has found out like what they've been up to. And at this point, he's feeling like he's just kind of lost as a king. He doesn't know what to do. The Wakandan people are upset. And a lot of the stuff that they're upset about is stuff that has been written about over like the last like 3 or 4 years. Like Namor drowned out a bunch of people. A lot of stuff that was going into the Hickman Avengers where Black Panther is like, right now the end of the worlds are coming and we're going to put this stuff on hold, but seriously, I'm going to kill you later. Mm-hmm. Like you messed with my people. So there's a lot of stuff that's building from other material, but all you really need to know is that a lot of people died and a lot of people are not feeling the king right now. And he starts talking to the Queen Mother and she's like, you know, you've always made it like the people are a burden to you and you've made it really clear to them. So now what you need to do is you need to step into the king role and you need to be inspiring. You need to like get back to the people and have, you know, get connected that way. And so when he tries to do that, he gets this great gathering together. There's an explosion and there's these suicide bombers now. And they've got Tony Stark technology where they're putting it in their chest and it's connected to their heart and they're blowing themselves up and they feel like they're doing this because they've lost people and they're mad and they're angry and so they've become terrorists. And there's even a map in issue 4, which I love maps, by the way, gives you a little history lesson on Wakanda and the people and the different cities. So make no mistake, this is a very political, very, very heavy political series, but it's one that is so rewarding, especially if you get who Black Panther is. And I feel like you're getting more of it. in issue 5. So actually, I want to start with Back of 4. Sorry, I'm taking a lot of time here because it
doesn't matter.
So
I can sing again. Do you want me to sing?
No, it's okay.
No, God, no.
So he meets with his people afterwards, and it's like, okay, the Queen Mother, she's okay. She sustained some injuries, but, you know, she's going to get through. And then he's like, thank you. It's so good to know that. But listen, no more discourse, no more deliberation, no more excuses, no more mercy. And he's just like, that's it. Like, you know, it's been so long for generations that, you know, war is our nation's trade. Mm. And we are Wakanda. We will not be terrorized. We are the terror. And I was just like, bam!
Nice.
And then in issue 5, you see one of the former Avengers. Where is he? He is Eden Fessy. He was the former Avenger known as Manifold. He showed up in the Hickman run. He's coming in to help Black Panther. He's taking down these terrorist organizations as he finds them. So he's trying to take down the Tony Stark suicide bomber people. And he comes across one of the guys who's still conscious. He's on the table. He's got this tech in him. And he says, you know, like, he's like, I lost my brother in this. And, you know, you, here we go. So he says, you know, you speak of hope. My hope died when Namor drowned my village. It died when the Black Order made my brother beg for death. So he's, you know, it's making it very personal in this 5th issue where you're getting what's going on with the Wakandan people. And so Black Panther says to him, you know, you could honor your brother or you could, you know, be the suicide bomber. You could destroy people. He says, I will honor your brother until my last breath, knowing that all of my breaths are but his mercy. I did not save him. May I suffer 1,000 torments for this, so long as I suffer them alone and no more Wakandans die. And he says, you know, this is my sacred duty because this is who I am, a king, your king. And now you must decide who you are. Will you honor your pain or will you honor your nation? Will you serve hate or will you serve the memory of your brother? And that's when I cried. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just makes it's, you know, it gets this deep political thing and you're trying to keep track of everything and you're like, oh my God, what's going on? And then it gets something like this where, like, you really get it. And Ta-Nehisi Coates is even said in the letters pages that he's trying to reflect, you know, the world, you know, so it while it's a superhero thing, it also just really hits to what's going on now. And I think that that's interesting to do in a Black Panther comic. Yeah. It's what Priest did. And I think that it's really in line with that. And it's really powerful. And it's really moving. And I think it's really paced well. And I just want everybody to read Black Panther now. So thank you for giving me that time.
Absolutely.
I think after that, everybody will read that.
Yeah.
We are all
should be reading that book. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. It's really, really great.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Nicole.
Did you have a comic book?
I do. I got a comic book in front of me. I got to the store early today, so I did what irritates people who work in comic book stores. I just stood and read an entire comic.
Bad.
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was hoping you wouldn't see me do that. Anyway, I read Godzilla Oblivion number 1 from IDW, and written by Joshua Fialkov, artwork by Brian Churilla. Churilla. I'm going to put a supercut together of all the time we butcher somebody's name. Colors by Jay Photos. I don't know if anybody's read this. It's another take on the Godzilla mythos, where a bunch of scientists open up a portal to another dimension, where there it's like, Gonzalo? I don't know. I don't know if it's a another dimension or just future Earth.
Mm-hmm. But it as alternate dimension.
It's an alternate dimension. And so what happens is there are all these kaiju terrorizing Earth, this alternate Earth, but Godzilla is keeping them all in check. So they want to keep Godzilla happy. And so the end of the book ends with the humans who opened the portal to go to this alternate universe getting chased by a three-headed Hydra of sorts. And then then it follows them back to Earth, and it ends with this three-headed monster coming through the portal. And read episode 2. So next issue, there he is. He's all angry and stuff. You know, it's fine. I like Godzilla. The only problem I have with it is that the artwork felt kind of rushed to me. Mm-hmm. It looks kind of sketchy. It's like somebody just colored in somebody's sketchbooks. And there's one specific picture that made me think about this. It is this panel. I don't want to bend it. It's this panel right there where you see, like, the dude, it looks like a child's drawing on his head right there. You're not going to see that, but it, it's that guy. Yeah. And I'm like, come on, man.
Kind of slapdash.
Yeah. It's very, it's kind of sloppy. I mean, the monsters look cool. Mm-hmm. The humans look kind of rushed. So,
do you want to know the three-headed guy's name?
Yeah,
it's like King Ghidorah.
King Ghidorah.
Ah,
He's a mainstream.
You were.
He's awesome.
He's cool.
He kept turning the book away from.
Yeah, he's like the Unicron of Godzilla.
Yeah, he really is.
King Ghidorah.
They kind of do Dragon Ball Z things with him too. At some point, he gets like blown up, and then there's like Robo Ghidorah, where like one head's a robot and the others
or Ghidorah. Different dubs pronounce it differently.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was fine. I enjoyed it. I probably still read it, but you know, yeah. My only qualm was the art didn't feel as fine to me.
Chris, have you been keeping up on the IDW Godzilla books? Because I lost momentum on Godzilla and Hell.
I read through Godzilla and Hell and I enjoyed it. I checked the first one here and I was like, yeah, it's okay. I had the same thing about the arts and I was like, I don't know if I really care too much about the long term. The next one is coming up is like Godzilla's Storm of the Century. And I kind of want to see what that's all about. And because he might be time traveling. Oh. I like the idea of miniseries where they just kind of give you weirder and weirder concepts. Yeah. Like Godzilla and Hill, Godzilla time travel.
IDW just, they happen upon the Godzilla license, and so they're just trying to push out as many Godzilla titles as they can?
I think they got the license. They want to hold on to the license because he's a popular thing. And so having an ongoing Godzilla series always loses momentum.
Yep.
Yeah. But you very do quickly. A bunch of weird little miniseries, and you can get like nice sales off of that. Yeah. I'm waiting for them to reteam with Charles Barkley again.
Godzilla gets a job.
Well, because they actually did like a great comic at Dark Horse where they actually did like 8 pages of Godzilla versus Barkley, and it was drawn by maybe Arthur Adams, and it was pretty awesome. And
well, but the new Godzilla that Toho is the film, I think it's coming out in the next couple of months. He is creepy and bizarre and mutated.
He looks like
and,
Attack on Titan Godzilla.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's the perfect way to describe him. Yeah. And he's so far in design from, or she, or you know, from the silhouette that we're accustomed to. It's actually off-putting to me.
Godzilla's not gender binary.
Isn't that gender binary?
Godzilla's beyond gender.
Yes.
This is true.
Cool. All right. Well, that's Godzilla Oblivion, one of many IDW Godzilla titles. And that is Book Report, and that's our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go to that, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You can find everything that Mr. Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. Look for the next The Panel Jumper live this November at West of Lennon. Mm-hmm. And also Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford.
Yay, yay.
Or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a review, or go to perfectboundpodcast.com and subscribe there, or email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what we got wrong. Tell us if you liked something that we didn't like, or you didn't like something that we did like. And with that, it's time to go on to quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This time, the questions come to us from our friend Ross.
Ross?
Yes, and he... this is titled The Fantastic and the Frigid, The Women of Daredevil.
Oh, dear.
Of course.
Alrighty.
Ross is a big Daredevil fan.
So, number one. This woman / women has both plagued and romanced Daredevil, often simultaneously. She has used her kinetic powers to fight the X-Men, Spider-Man, Deadpool, and even Power Pack, but she's mostly crazy about Daredevil.
Typhoid Mary.
Yeah, Typhoid Mary. Number two. Bullseye killed this young love of Daredevil using his own billy clubs. Cole?
Oh, billy clubs. I was going to say Elektra, but oh.
Karen Page.
It was Karen Page. Okay. Because I'm like, right. He didn't... Oh, I'm
number
sure
three,
that'll be your next question.
So, Cole?
Yes.
Yes. Bullseye killed this young love of Daredevil using her own Psy. Hmm.
And an Ace of Spades playing card across the throat. I just reread that like yesterday.
All right, that is it.
That would be Elektra. Yeah.
Okay, number four.
Not Foggy.
This woman was the daughter of Matt Murdock's business partner who Daredevil gradually determined was involved in a criminal conspiracy masterminded by the Purple Man. She also dated Tony Stark. But this is
but
not a Tony Stark quiz. Who didn't? Anybody have any idea?
I read some of that.
You read some of it, Cole? Nicole? No? All right, I'll give it to you. It is Heather Glenn. All right.
Because she's in the Miller stories that I'm rereading right now.
And finally, number five, this deaf woman was able to recreate any physical action that she saw. Matt Murdock fell in love with her because that's like 90% of what Murdock does in Daredevil comics.
Yeah.
Kingpin tricked her into battling Daredevil because that's like 90% of what Kingpin does. And she showed her appreciation by blinding the criminal overlord.
Go. Echo.
All right, Echo. That is the answer. Thank you, Ross, for those questions. Thank
you
for listening.
We're in sync.
And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.